Welcome to Modern Digital Applications, a podcast for corporate decision makers and executives looking to create or extend their digital business with the help of modern applications, processes, and software strategy. Now, welcome your host, a recognized industry thought leader in cloud computing and published author, bringing over 30 years of experience, Lee Acheson.
Amazon Web Services provides a cloud certification program to encourage and enable growing your AWS cloud technical skills to help you grow your career and your business. Have you wondered what it takes to become AWS certified? In this episode, join me with Kevin Downs, a trial by fire expert on the AWS certification program, while we discuss the AWS certification program and how to best utilize it. And then, what was EC2 like in the old days? Back before it was actually useful in real-life scenarios. This is AWS Certifications on Modern Digital Applications.
And now our main story on Modern Digital Applications.
Kevin Downs is a Solution Strategy Director at New Relic. Kevin has deep knowledge on IT operations, cloud industry, and works with customers on their cloud adoption journey. Kevin is a customer-facing solution architect with experience in cloud computing on Amazon Web Services. Kevin has deep knowledge on the AWS certifications program and personally holds many certifications. I had a chance to talk to Kevin about AWS and specifically the AWS certifications program. This is part one of my interview with Kevin. Kevin, welcome and thank you for taking your time to talk to me today.
You're very welcome, Lee. Thank you for inviting me.
Great. So tell me about your current job. What exactly do you do? And what do you enjoy about what you're currently doing?
So my current job as inside the marketing organization inside New Relic is a PMM for infrastructure. So my responsibilities include helping our customers understand how to monitor, how to migrate, how to do things with their infrastructure, be that Kubernetes, be that containers, or Docker, or host even on the three cloud vendors, whether it's AWS, Azure, or GCP.
So you use the word infrastructure. Tell me what is included in infrastructure and what is not.
So for me, infrastructure is usually, you know, a server, a host, something that you put software and applications on. It's not serverless. It's something that you deploy. However, we do integrate with a lot of different types of virtualized technologies. I mentioned earlier Kubernetes, Docker as well, so container-based things. We also take care of monitoring, you know, databases with on-host integrations. So anything that you would use to install your software on and then deliver it to your customers is more than likely something that New Relic infrastructure can help you with and monitor.
Okay. And you talk about installing software, et cetera. Are you talking about on-prem or are you talking about on-prem and cloud? Or
exactly. That's actually both. So on-premise or cloud or hybrid cloud, depending on where you want to do it. In fact, we do all of the above, including wherever you want to put a piece of infrastructure, whether it's a Linux-based or Windows-based host, we can monitor that as well, anywhere you put it, whether it's on-premises or in one of the major cloud vendors.
So tell me, in your mind, and I'm not necessarily talking about New Relic infrastructure here, but just kind of infrastructure in general, what's the difference between infrastructure that's on-prem versus infrastructure in the cloud?
Not as much as a lot of people think. They think it's a very different thing. There are a couple different things that you'd want to think about when you think on-premise versus a cloud. When you think on-premise, it takes a while to plan it, organize it, you know, scale it properly, buy it, receive it, you know, set it up, install it, patch management, all those things. It takes a lot of work when you do it on-prem. But when you do it in the cloud, you get a lot more flexibility with regard to the services that you have available to you, the flexibility of scaling them up and scaling them down, or scaling them in and out. You get a lot of scalability things that you can do with it. You can pick the specific server type, size, that you need for the specific job, and then you can scale it up and if you need more of those, depending on demand. So I would say that the biggest differences between on-premises and cloud would have to be the agility in which you can scale in the cloud-based environments much, much more so than you can in on-premises environments.
So you can scale better in the cloud than you can on-prem in general, and that's because of shared capacity and all those sorts of things.
Absolutely. And you also want to think, when you think scale, don't just think scale up. You also want to think scaling down. So if you have your biggest day, you can scale up your needs to satisfy your biggest day. But when that biggest day is over, you definitely don't want to keep all that infrastructure up and running. That incurs costs. You definitely want to lower it or scale it back down to the needs that you're currently existing for whatever day you're experiencing.
You and I, we talk a lot about the cloud. And so let's talk about you a little bit here now. I know you describe yourself as a cloud expert, specifically with a focus on expertise in AWS. So when did you get involved in AWS?
Oh, that's going a while back. And yeah, you and I do talk a lot about this. I would say it goes back to about 2009 when I was working for Hewlett Packard. Back then it was actually called Hewlett Packard. And I was a solution architect selling to customers in the Americas. And we had our own demo-based environment that people put together in our data centers. And there were things that my customers wanted me to do or things that I needed to show off that just weren't quite available in the shared demo center that I was given. So what I did is I happened to stumble across AWS and started playing around with it. Now, this actually goes back to right around the transition between command line based infrastructure where you would launch a host or an instance via the command line and the GUI interface more so that you recognize today. So I just got into it when I was in the command line phase, and I did that. So what I would do is I would create these instances, I would set them all up, prepare them all for my demos, and I could even create multiple instances and then start integrating them together to show my customers an integrated demo solution with the software that I was responsible for. That was about 2009, 2010. I did that for many years. It was a pretty fun time, being able to launch servers to do exactly what you needed anytime you were ready for a demo.
You used an interesting phrase there. You used a move from API to GUI. And I know what you're talking about. And for those who aren't aware, in the early days of AWS, everything had to be launched via an API. If you wanted a new server, you had to make an API call in order to create a server instance. And they were as command line tools and third-party tools to help with that, but it was all API-driven from AWS standpoint. But around the time period that you're talking about, meaning AWS, invested in building a GUI control panel, if you will, that would help manage a lot of that. And that's, I think, what you're talking about. Can you tell me a little bit about, in your mind, how did the move from being purely API-based to GUI-based service management, how that enabled customers to use AWS, and what type of customers did it enable?
Oh, that was a profound transition. I mean, it was always fun to, create these very complex, long API command lines, but the move to the GUI-based, web-based configuration tools made it much more easy to digest, easy to configure, easy to understand. You had all the options that were part of your command line right there in front of you. You could set it up with the switches you needed, with the networking you needed. You could figure it out much easier with the GUI-based environment or the web-based GUI environment than you could with the command line. And it made it much more accessible to customers. And I know I was, a power user, and I enjoyed that. But I would say that I probably learned more when we got to the GUI side of things, because it gave me more things that I could look at, more things that I could understand, and the ability to put these things together within the GUI was much easier to do.
Yeah, and I certainly remember when AWS moved to the GUI days too. I was actually working on Elastic Beanstalk at AWS back then, and we were one of the early ones to make use of some of those GUI changes that were going on at the time. But, the early GUI was pretty rudimentary. I mean, you could do basic things like launching instances and monitor instances. But even back then, CloudWatch monitoring wasn't really solidly incorporated into the console. That came within a year or two. They started adding CloudWatch statistics into the console, but a lot of it wasn't there initially. How did you first start monitoring your instances? This is before New Relic. This is before, CloudWatch was really a huge thing. What did you use for monitoring back then?
Well, that's pretty much what I was doing. I was using HP software, and the software I was an expert in at HP was their operations monitoring tool. So I was responsible for, you know, HP OpenView or, you know, HP operations, depending on the decade or the time you're looking at. And it was an agent-based monitoring solution for hosts, and I would actually use it to monitor the instances I was launching within AWS. So not only could I spin up a, you know, very detailed integrated demo environment, I could also monitor that same environment with the software that I was showing off. So it was kind of two for one, being able to use AWS for my demos.
So you were able to use AWS as a way to demo essentially OpenView is what you were building. So how did that change? What was the next step in your evolution along your journey to become cloud knowledgeable? I mean, certainly back then, the cloud was not enterprise ready, really, is probably the best way to say it. It was people like you who were using the cloud for projects, for specialized things. There weren't whole programs in large companies ever using the cloud. How did your journey change where you moved beyond just demos and just short little projects until you started using it for more serious projects? How did that progression work?
Well, I would say there was a good 3, 4, 5 years in there where it was just doing it for demos. And as I got more and more proficient in using the environment, and as AWS put out more and more services, I started using them and learning them and understanding them. It was about this time where, you know, certifications started, and, you know, I looked into that and found that AWS offered some certifications. And that's really where I would say my AWS cloud knowledge really exploded. And it became a natural thing to learn about these certifications and, you know, want to take it. So about this time, way back when, there was a company called A-Cloud Guru that was out there, and they had put out some videos on practicing and studying for the certifications. And it was a huge success for me to be able to, you know, not only use it for my own job and my own environment, but to be able to practice and test and pass the test. That's when I really started my cloud career. Being certified gave me a lot of, you know, backing to let them know that I knew what I was talking about, and it really helped my career.
It gave you credibility.
A lot of credibility, absolutely.
This is a certification program that AWS put out specifically for credentialing people to show that they had knowledge in their systems. Is that correct?
Absolutely. And early on, there were only, I think, 5 certifications when I started on the path.
So why don't you talk about those early ones? What were they, and what types of things were in them?
Oh, sure. So the 3 associate level certifications, they were solutions architect, developer, and SysOp. And way back when, we're going around, I think, the 2013, 2015 timeframe, that solution architect one was a very wide certification. You had to know a lot of all the services AWS was using. You didn't have to be very, very deep in it, but you definitely had to be very wide in the services that they were offering. And that one was actually considered the entry point in a technical path. I followed that up with the developer certification, and then sometime, you know, not too long after that one, I took on the SysOp certification and passed that one as well. So those were the 3 associate level certifications. And back during this time, you had to pass an associate level certification before you could even attempt a professional. It was kind of a prerequisite. They no longer have that today, which is nice. But back then, you definitely had to, you know, prove your knowledge in an associate level certifications before you can move up to the professional level. And then I'd say not too many years ago, I think 3 or 4 years ago, I, you know, took some time and worked on my professional level solutions architect exam and passed that one as well. And that was a pretty cool time.
Stay tuned for the next episode of Modern Digital Applications, where I continue with part 2 of my interview with Kevin.
This is Tech Tappers, little bits of tech here on Modern Digital Applications.
I started working for Amazon in 2005. This was before AWS even existed. I started working with AWS soon after they started in 2006, but in the early days of EC2, they did not have any persistent disk storage. So you could launch an EC2 instance, log in, set it up the way you wanted to set it up, but if you terminated the instance, you lost everything. there was no disk storage that survived the termination of the instance. What made it worse was that EC2 instances weren't very stable back then. You had to assume that at any given point in time, the instance could and would simply disappear, vanish, terminate on its own. EC2 instances were essentially stateless. You could not assume the state of the instance was available for any period of time at all. This really made EC2 useful only for a handful of stateless use cases, and it made it absolutely useless as a database server. Given that at the time, AWS didn't have a database service either, this greatly limited the usefulness of EC2. That didn't change the interest that everyone had in EC2. Imagine, you could purchase a server for pennies an hour. This was a highly novel capability at the time. You could tell that this was going to be a big deal. You could tell that EC2 was going to change the way computation was accomplished in the world. But it just wasn't very useful yet. It wouldn't become useful until EBS, Elastic Block Storage, was added to EC2 nearly 2 years later, in August of 2008. Now, suddenly, you could save your instance state. You could bring an instance down and relaunch a new instance with the exact same file system state you had when the other one went down. This capability, combined with increased stability of EC2 in general, and now suddenly EC2 was an extremely attractive computation service. You could use an EC2 instance for nearly anything that a regular service could be used for. Cloud computing was officially here, but it wasn't EC2 that made cloud computing practical. Rather, it was EBS.
Like what we do? Share this on your socials and tell everyone.
Thank you for listening to Modern Digital Applications with Lee Acheson. Lee helps executives keep up with industry trends and best practices in cloud computing, application scaling, DevOps, and applications modernization in order to stay in front of disruptive influencers. Subscribe to this podcast to ensure you get each new episode as it's available. Visit mdacast.com for all the resources and publications from Lee and his team. Thank you for tuning in to today's show.